Let's talk some Cleveland Browns football on this week's Budweiser's From the Sidelines. It's presented by our friends at North Ridgeville Convenient Sunoco on Center Ridge and Barton Roads. We bring in the one and only longtime sportscaster, JT John Telich. Thank you, as always, for joining me. Good sir, how are we doing today?
We're doing great. How about yourself, Rocco, and everybody listening at home or out and about?
Well, we're bracing the weather change, as we've become oh so accustomed to here in Northeast Ohio as we hit December. Obviously, holiday season right around the corner, but doing good, JT. Doing good. Hopefully, the Browns can do a little better moving forward, as it was a tough one against those Los Angeles Rams this past Sunday, but still a couple of bright spots. First and foremost, I think Joe Flacco, not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but man, JT, he was making some good, solid veteran throws. And it was a little surprising that he was able to make some of these throws, you know, kind of throwing into tight windows, almost throwing it blind to receivers, expecting them to be there. And it worked out more often than not for him on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, just statistically, you know, 23 of 44 for the 254 yards, two touchdowns, and that one crazy interception where it looked like he just took a flyer. But the cool thing was, is he threw to nine different receivers. I don't think that's been done in a while. And you mentioned about loosening up the defense. He had 19 passes that were in the air for 10 or more yards, and that is the most that we have seen in 5 years. So he clearly has the arm strength and showed it on Sunday to throw the ball all over the yard. I'm assuming even if DTR gets cleared that they're going to continue to ride this hand. I could be wrong, but, I mean, as we sit here taping this on Wednesday, nothing official has been stated. So I thought he played well. I thought he obviously got greedy on the one deep ball that was intercepted by John Johnson the third. But other than that, they had 19 points of offense with about 8 minutes to go in the football game, and certainly had opportunities for, you know, to get more offense as well. I thought they did their part, but sadly, as it were, or maybe regrettably, in recent weeks, it just doesn't seem like the D's been holding up their, obviously, their end of the bargain.
I do want to get to the defense for sure, because I think you're absolutely right. They're kind of treading water right now, as I think you sent me in our pre-show notes here. But one thing I did want to ask you about, it, just kind of curious your opinion on this whole Deshaun Watson in the suite, not on the field. I know the TV cameras had him in the suite and he had the sunglasses on or whatever, and people were kind of making a big hubbub about it. And then they show Joe Burrow on the sideline for the Bengals and he's got the iPad, and people are just kind of making a big deal about this. I personally don't buy a whole lot into it, I guess, but I'm curious your 2 cents on the matter.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same page with that. He was down on the field with his teammates. So in, you know, recent times, Nick Chubb's been down on the field. And then, you know, he's been up in the suite as well. So I think it's the folks that have an axe to grind towards Deshaun. It's a little fuel for the fire for them. But for the most part, you know, he was at UCLA and was there when the team was training in this, you know, the week in between the Denver and Rams games. He was there. He went, obviously, to L.A. to rehab. And it's very weird. It's like when a guy gets injured, everybody expects him to be in every meeting. But then there's also a part of the hierarchy where they really want to, you know, it's not that they don't want to be reminded of his injury, but they've got 22 other people, 11 on each side of the ball, that they've got to coach up.
Right.
And so, you know, I think it's just kind of like a case of more reasons for people to say that Deshaun Watson was the worst, you know, signing in the history of pro football and basketball and hockey combined. And I think that's just where it stands.
Sure.
And it'll be, obviously, this week, he'll be down on the field before the game, I would assume, and, you know, they'll take their chances on trying to get a victory against the Jags.
What are our thoughts on the receiver room right now? I know we kind of talked about them last week a little bit, some more injuries now with Amari Cooper getting banged up in that Rams game. I know drops kind of continue to be an issue with this group that, look, at the start of the year, I think people were looking and saying, hey, man, the Browns got some depth at receiver, and now that's become a little thin.
Yeah, and good that they did sign Flacco, just because he had a bit of history with Elijah Moore, and so we saw more targets for Moore. We got more, and I think we're going to see more of Tillman, obviously, the young kid, the big receiver, and then maybe a bit more of David Bell, who's kind of gotten, seems like, lost in the shuffle. It was good to see them stretch the field, and that was right into the wheelhouse for someone like Amari Cooper. But then, boom, he gets knocked out of the game, and you don't know what's going to be able to do as far as making up some weapons in your offensive personnel, be it as it may. I know they have Goodwin; that's a possibility. He's up and about and doing his thing, so maybe there's something there. But by and large, Rocco, I've been underwhelmed with the receiving core that they've had. And I think a little bit you may have seen more passes, like long handoffs, if you will, to Jerome Ford on Sunday, because obviously with Joe throwing the ball 20 yards or more down the field many times, it loosened things up a little bit for that kind of quarterback to running back dump off pass or screen game and that type of stuff. So I think they have to really be creative, because I'm not underwhelmed, but I'm not totally impressed with the core of receivers that they have.
Again, talking Browns football with John Telich on this week's Budweiser's From the Sidelines, presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco on Center Ridge and Barton Roads. All right, let's talk about the defense, JT. Dynamite to start the year, and it's just not been as dynamite, to say the least, in the last couple of weeks. Obviously, plenty of points given up against those Rams. And just kind of curious your take on what's going on with that defense right now. Obviously, injuries have played a big role, as we talked about with Denzel Ward, off air a little bit. But, that defense just kind of seems to have lost a step as of late.
It seems to, and then of course the last 2 weeks, games on the road, they haven't really been performing as lights out on the road versus, obviously at Cleveland Browns Stadium. Now they're 26th in the league in points allowed. And remember earlier in the season, we were talking about literally, historic numbers. They kept referring to the defense as historic. In fact, even in the last couple of games when we were getting Mark Sanchez's coverage. And I would just say to Mark that you don't need to say historic anymore, because they're just, right now, they're just not, they're taking on water, as we mentioned. Mm-hmm. And, they've given up 5 yards per carry in the last four games. So they're being run upon, and they're banged up. That's obviously Denzel losing him and not having him in the lineup in the last couple of weeks, that, geez, oh, man, they lost the game. I think your great players make plays, and not having him at your, quote, disposal the last couple of weeks certainly didn't do them any favors, with guys like Mike Ford getting extensive minutes. So fingers are crossed this week to see if Denzel can answer the bell. Miles this week, but being matched up against a backup left tackle in Walker Little with Cam Robinson out, that may help Miles, but I think we didn't see much pressure because that was Matthew Stafford's forte. Quick decision, get rid of the ball. Quick decision, get rid of the ball, and they couldn't get near him. And we don't know the extent of how Miles has been banged up shoulder-wise. We see the taping that he has and all that sort of stuff, but we're just really not, he's out there. He's out there trying to ball as best that he can, and I respect the world of Myles Garrett for how he tries to go out and do his business when he may not obviously be at 100%.
So that brings us to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who aren't 100% in their own right. They lose Trevor Lawrence in a tough, just brutal Monday night loss that turned into for the Jaguars against the Cincinnati Bengals, which obviously wasn't great for the Browns for divisional purposes, but I digress. So a Lawrence-less Jaguars coming into town, and as we kind of talked about off-air, JT, the Jags, and I didn't realize this, they haven't lost a road game this year. They have been lights out on the road, so Cleveland will have their hands full this Sunday, to say the least.
Well, you've got a very not-so-mobile quarterback backing up Lawrence and Beathard, so that you have going for you. D'Ernest Johnson's getting a few more carries and a little bit more. So, you know, you'll see the former Brown as far as that's concerned.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest thing that we would be looking at this week, at least in if I can put on my Dick Goddard hat here, it's going to be windy. And, you know, they're talking about we could be looking at 20, 25 miles an hour with, you know, obviously some kind of rain or whatever in the forecast for this weekend. And it's not going to be that pristine atmosphere that they were throwing the football in last week inside SoFi Stadium. And, you know, it could be colder, all those types of things that Cleveland likes to say is part and parcel to them having a belief that they have that home field advantage on the lakefront, so go out there and prove it. That's pretty much the edict for the Browns. If you are a team that, you know, makes it difficult for folks to come into your stadium, here's a good chance to get one of the, I would say they're going to need three wins in the final five games to get to the playoffs. So here's a chance to notch one of those against a backup quarterback.
Reason to have confidence, JT, in this team making the postseason at this juncture?
You know, right now with them being the seventh seed, so kind of last man standing, if you will, I think with the schedule, with the Bears coming in after the Jags, and then a tough one down in Texas, and then the Jets coming here, there have been a mess for much of this year. It obviously will come down to that final game in Cincinnati. I can recall it was 07, you know, they had to win that final game in Cincinnati with Derek Anderson as their quarterback.
Gosh, yeah.
Yeah, do you remember that? I think he threw three picks that day. It was a windy day. Long story short, Cincinnati has a young quarterback that's filling in for Joe Burrow. Jake Browning looked great on Monday night. I was really impressed. So that initially with Joe being out, you would think, okay, that's a dub, you know, but that kind of alters how things go the rest of the way. But they definitely have to win three of the next five.
Well, a good chance to get out on the right foot in terms of winning three of the next five. If they can take care of business at home against the Jaguars, this weekend should be a good one on Sunday, Browns and Jags. Brownies looking for the big-time win. All right, JT, one final time. Let's talk some high school football this season. State championships are in the books. And how about Northeast Ohio? Dang near cleaning house. What, five champs across Northeast Ohio, six across Northern Ohio, if you include Toledo Central Catholic. But, and how about those T-I-G-E-R-S Tigers down in Maslin? They finally, JT, get that state championship win in the playoff era.
And imagine that they did it with the final score. What was it? 7-2.
7-2.
Right? I think that was the final.
Yep.
And Hoban made a bunch of boo-boos, and they clearly had a pass right at the end of the game that, you know, could have put them over the top that was dropped right down by, you know, the kid was on his butt trying to make the catch right on the goal line there. And a big shout out to the CBC. You know, the Chagrin Valley Conference has two state champions in that league with the Kirtland Hornets and, of course, the Perry Pirates getting their first ever title. And also shout out to St. Edward's now at 7, and Kirtland also hit the 7 championships. The numbers for Tiger Laverty's career are, I believe, 224 wins and 20 losses in his many years there at Kirtland, and just a remarkable thing that he has done. And I also thought the head coach of Perry made a real neat statement to the effect that it was cool what a community can do to enjoy their product. Kids growing up in a community, playing for the same community. You know, we have movement in high school football and in sports today. And for those kids and their parents and their grandparents and their aunts and uncles and what have you, to be able to kind of close up the city, the town, and go to football games on Friday night, it harkens back to the days of old, if you will. So I thought that was really cool. Kudos to Northeast Ohio and Northern Ohio, as you mentioned. And it can't go without mentioning three state championships in a row in the biggest division in high school football in Ohio is pretty impressive for St. Edward's. So they deserve all the accolades that they've been getting.
Not to put you on the spot, JT, but I don't know if you got a chance to see the attendance numbers from the state title games. Did you make anything of those or not so much?
Not so much. I didn't get a whole lot of numbers on it. The one game that I took in on Friday morning, the Kirtland game, that was a pretty good crowd with the Versailles fans coming up. and Kirtland always travels well to boot. So, first of all, I'm very happy that Tom Benson Stadium, the folks at the Hall of Fame, they do such a great job that they have it for another 3-year contract. So that's a win in my book. I really loved it the years that they had both Canton and Massillon trading games. I thought that was just real neat to have high school football up in such a hotbed as Massillon, mm-hmm. you know, with all the history that they have. And then obviously over in Canton with the Pro Football Hall of Fame right there, I'd love for it to go back to that. But I think having everything at Tom Benson, the folks there do a great job of putting it on. And it's fun to go down there and watch the teams. And one final shout-out to Ted Ginn and his Glendale kids. They've won two in a row, and that's pretty impressive. And, you know, they've got so much talent there, and they're one of the top programs in the state, and they continue to show that.
So now we get a little 8-month breather, and then it's right back at it when August rolls back around. And as you know very well, JT, that'll be here before we know it. So
you will. You're right.
Oh, yeah. So Browns, Jaguars this Sunday. Brownies looking to get it done and get another season of high school football in the books, and what a fantastic season it was. JT, thank you for the time. As always, my friend, I appreciate it. Looking forward to the games this weekend, and we'll break it all down next time.
We shall do that. Have a great week, you guys. Thanks, Rocco.